mentioned of the Homer Hour because I've wanted to talk to Jim Boylan for like 5 years, and every year I tell him, I will get together, and I never did. Had you pretty much given up and just said, every year at the Bo Ellis tournament, he says it, but it never happens.
I just know that you're going to say, hey, we got to get together and do something. And I'm like, okay, yeah, great. Call me anytime, Homer. And, you know, here I am again.
Here you are again. And again, it's the Bo Ellis Golf Tournament for the Nicole Ellis Foundation. But in talking with Brian Bulaga, I said part of it to me is just to be around people who experienced a national championship. It's forever. And I said, you just need one. You want more, but you're in the club forever.
Yeah. It's a great club to be in. It's coming up on 50 years in 27. So, I mean, the time just goes flying by. But I'll never forget, we were in the locker room after the game, and Coach McGuire said to us, he said, this moment right here is going to get bigger and bigger and bigger in your life as time goes on. And, you know, it really has, and you just, you know, you just have those memories and those connections with people. You accomplish something that a lot of people strive for. You know, all the Marquette teams over the years, great teams with great players. And, you know, it takes skill for sure. It takes talent for sure. And it takes some luck. And in 1977, we had the ball bounce our way several times. And we came up with the plays we needed to make at the right time. And we were able to win that championship. And I can't wait for another Marquette team to win one, honestly. So, cheering on Chaka and his team, and they've had some great teams over the last couple of seasons, and so hopefully that continues.
You want them to feel what you felt.
Exactly. I mean, it was an amazing feeling. You know, the strange thing for me personally, when the buzzer sounded, there was kind of a numbness that came over me, like a, you know, you can't believe it actually happened. And so, you know, you don't really know how – I didn't know really how to act. I was just like, you know, next thing I know, I saw Bo, and Bo hugged me. And then I was like, okay, this is it, man. You know, and you know, just something really special. And, you know, I grew up watching the UCLA teams with Kareem and Bill Walton and watching them dominate and watching those Final Fours. And just imagining what it would be like. And, you know, there we were. And you know, with Al's last season, it was, you know, you felt special in the sense that you felt like basketball was going to give something back to Al McGuire for all that he had done for the sport. And it happened. And still to this day, I have a hard time kind of, you know, articulating how that feeling was.
I went back and watched the game because I remember parts of it, but like you had a huge lead and then North Carolina goes on like an 18-4 run early in the second half and it's gone.
Yeah. Yeah. They came out, I mean, right out of the second half. And, you know, we kind of controlled the tempo in the first half. We had, we were, you know, executing. We were playing our game and then they came out in the second half. And they started to play their game, which was you know, higher pace, you know, with Phil Ford and Michael Corrin and Walter Davis. I mean, they had an amazing team. When I look at the results and I say we won the NCAA championship, which is amazing, but we beat North Carolina.
But I know why you beat North Carolina. You know the reason.
I don't know why.
Because there was a player on the team who I believe, now Tony Smith, who I work with, says I make stuff up, so I've always said this, who could have gone probably anywhere in the country. He went to Assumption College in Worcester, Mass., which, by the way, was where my uncle, Dr. Mike True, taught for about 30 years. I'm the only one who knew how to say Worcester. No one else did. And I've always said you went there because there was a member of your family, I couldn't remember, who was sick. Yeah. Otherwise, you could have gone literally to any school in the country. Tony Smith, I hope you're listening. Is that story accurate?
That is 100% accurate. My mom I was being recruited. My visits were to Kentucky and Notre Dame and Maryland and Virginia and schools like that. And my older brother, Michael, played at Assumption. So I had been going up to Assumption for the 4 years that he was there. I was just a companion to his girlfriend who used to drive up from Jersey City. And she's like, I don't want to drive alone. Come with me. And I'd be like, okay. So anyway, so I was extremely comfortable. Joe O'Brien, who went on to be the executive director of the Basketball Hall of Fame for over 20 years, I believe, was the coach, and he was a great coach, and they played an up-tempo game, and I went, so I was struggling with, my mom was really sick, and I didn't know what to do, and I didn't know where I wanted to go, and I wasn't quite sure about things, and so I just said, you know what, I'm comfortable at Assumption, I'm a basketball player, I can, I've seen Joe O'Brien, the coach at Assumption, make my brother into the NCAA Division II Player of the Year.
Right, so you decided to go there, but you were there 2 years. After 1 year, how was your mom? And then I'm assuming you could have gone to many places. I know coaches mm-hmm. who recruited you. They're still, ain't no way that guy's staying at Assumption College. That's what I'm thinking.
Well, you know, back then it was more of a hands-off thing back then. They didn't really, you know, it's not like today where, you know, guys are constantly looking to poach people from other teams. But after my first year, we had a great year. We finished third in the country, went to the Final Four, and lost in the semis, won the consolation game, which they used to have way back when, and we did the exact same thing the next year. So 2 years in a row, we made the Final Four.
You never thought of leaving after a year, or you did?
It was in the back of my head. But then after my second year, I was like, you know, I really need to test myself a little bit more. And so I started sending out feelers to teams that had recruited me. Like
North Carolina.
And
this is how you won the national chair. Dean Smith won it because Dean Smith had a rule that he would not ever recruit a transfer other than someone said Bob McAdoo. But I thought, what is his problem? This wasn't a guy going to transfer into school. He went to the school because his mom was sick. Now, I'm incapable of comprehending that Dean Smith wouldn't have made an exception for that. I don't know how much he really wanted you, but if Jim Boylan's on North Carolina and not on Marquette, Marquette does not win the national championship, and if he had offered you a scholarship, I believe that you would have gone to North Carolina. But again, Tony Smith would say, I'm making that up. So now we find out.
That North Carolina was my first choice. That's where I wanted to go. And Joe O'Brien, God bless him, he's passed away now. He called Dean Smith. He was my coach at Assumption. He called Dean Smith and said, "Hey, you know, Jimmy wants to transfer. He wants, you know, he really likes North Carolina. You got," and they said, "Well, let's think about it." And then he came back a few days later and said, "What you just said about not taking transfers." And his first line to Coach O'Brien was, "You know who you should call? You should call Al McGuire. He loves to take transfers." And that's kind of how that ball got rolling. And not 2 weeks later, I was heading to Milwaukee.
And my other great, so Tony Smith, if you're listening, the stories I've told are accurate. Now, this one I'm not sure. Because you had been coming in as a transfer, Hank Raymonds, who I believe took care of all the academics in terms of what players needed, he signed you up for like 28 credit hours your first semester. Now, I'm not sure, for people who don't know, 15 was normal. 18 is if they found an easy class for you, then you could get ahead. But I think the number that you had was significantly above 15 and 18.
It was crazy. I walked into the registration at the old gym where they used to have it. And as soon as I walked in, Hank was right there. He was on me like white on rice. I got your schedule. I got it all mapped out for you. This is what you're going to do. And I was new. I didn't know anything. So I was just, okay, okay, great. And I think I had 24 credits. That's semester.
It's not possible to take 24 credits.
I know. So then the next semester, when I went to register, I eased my way into the old gym and I peeked around the corner and I saw Hank standing there. I went in the other direction and I said, no, I'll take care of this myself.
All right, to the championship game. The game was won at the free throw line. Late in the game, you had, and people don't realize, there was no 10 fouls in automatic two. There were 8 1-and-1s. And the only person who missed a free throw was Bernard Toon. He missed the front end. I think it would have been a technical or something. But either way, the other 7 1-and-1s, the Marquette Warriors, hit 14. 13 of 14, both ends of 7 1-and-1s. That's why you won the game. Accurate?
Accurate. I believe we were second in the country that year in free throw percentage. I shot 94, but I didn't shoot like a high volume. Butch Lee shot almost 300 or 250, somewhere around there, and Butch shot 86%. So Bo could make free throws, and Bernard could make free throws, and Gary Rosenberger could make free throws. And so, yeah, I mean, we had a group of guys who could step to the line in a pressure situation and make, like you said, a 1-and-1. It was no two shots. It was 1-and-1. You miss the first one, you're out of luck, pal. So, yeah, I think that was a super important key for us in those tournament games.
Talking with Jim Boylan again, part of the 1977 championship team at Marquette. Also, I believe he's in the Hall of Fame as an interim NBA coach. I don't know how many have been interims for two different teams. I was with LeBron, and so we can talk about the NBA. But when I said I was talking to Jim Boylan, one of the Marquette fans, you got to talk to him about the fight that Al McGuire had with whoever it was in the earlier tournament game against Cincinnati. And I said, all right, I will. So...
Well, that was quite a game. First of all, kind of backstory of that a little bit. Maurice Lucas came to the game. Maurice was at the game. Now, he's playing for Portland at the time. He was on the cover of Sports Illustrated as the enforcer. We're playing, and in the first half, we're not playing so well against Cincinnati. And there's a timeout. Next thing I know, Maurice is over in our huddle, and he's punching guys and shoving guys and like, come on, you guys, what's going on? So anyway, that was a little side story, which was fabulous. But Al, you were allowed to yell at Al. You could say whatever you want to him. He didn't really care. He'd go right back at you, so on and so on. He didn't like when you made defensive mistakes. Bernard Thune made two defensive mistakes in 3 minutes. Timeout. We get out to, we're in the huddle, and Al's yelling at him, and Bernard's yelling back, and this is, so now we get to halftime, and I think we're down 3 or 4 points, something like that. We go into the locker room, and we're kind of all sitting there waiting for Coach to come in. Finally, Coach comes in, and he's pacing back and forth, back and forth, and I'm like, oh boy, this something's going to happen right here. And he spots Bernard sitting kind of in the corner, and he just goes after him, and they were exchanging, pleasantries in the first half. And Al said, no one calls me this and no one calls me that. Next thing you know, got a little physical.
Who threw the first punch? Come on.
Coach threw the first punch. And Bernard jumped up out of his seat and tackled Coach, and they went over a score, a training table where you get your ankles taped and all that, and there was a curtain, separated the shower, the two of them rolled over that. Next thing you know, Rick Majerus finally wrestles Bernard away from Al, because they're like, literally, they're on top of each other, and takes him out of the locker room. But the crazy thing was, one of those arenas where you went right through the rotunda to get to your locker room. So when the door burst open, all the fans were lined up getting their hot dogs at halftime and their sodas. And next thing you know, you hear this door just explodes and Rick and Bernard go out. And the fans all turn around and look. And they're looking like they're wide-eyed. And next thing you know, the door closes and... all hell breaks loose. We go out in the second half. We play a great second half. We beat Cincinnati. First game of the championship season. Game's over. We come back in. Media comes in. What did Coach say at halftime? And even back then, when you can get away with a lot of stuff you can't get away with these days as far as coach-player relationships, I said, you may want to talk to Coach about that one. And so I just let that one go.
Wow, he told me this would be good, and he was correct. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll get to more Marquette, because it's been enough years where I need to ask you, just explain Al McGuire to people, because to me it's almost like Vince Lombardi. There are a lot of people around now have no idea.
Yeah,
I mean, it's been a long time, and There are people I know, younger people, Vince Lombardi, who, what? They don't know the essence of him as they may not know the essence of Al McGuire, and that will be next.
This is the Homer Hour on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
Every job is done one shovel at a time. No one wants to hear a grown man whine. And I like
to half hour of the Homer Hour because I promised to Jim Boylan, one-time interim coach for the Milwaukee Bucks, one-time interim coach for the Chicago Bulls, an assistant with Cleveland when LeBron won his championship. I think it was 2016. And for years I said, we'll do this. I never did. And now I get a chance, so I'm thankful you can do it and thankful they found a half hour. Give 60 seconds on Al McGuire to try to explain to people, because I'm sure when that occurred in that locker room, people would have thought the players are gone. This is the end of it, and I'm sure the players thought, well, one more story.
Yeah, well, you know, Coach was a unique character, first of all. I tell people all the time, I left practice almost every single day, MFing that guy, and because he would drive you nuts. I mean, he would drive you nuts. He'd push you and prod you, and you know, he was a New York wise guy. He had a lot of wisecracks, you know, but I grew up in Jersey City, New Jersey, and I knew 10 guys like Al McGuire. Tough, honest, intelligent, and you know, Al was such a showman that people, I think, kind of lost what a great coach he was. He was.
I have a theory. I say he's the greatest defensive coach in the history of the state. Dick Bennett gets a lot of credit and deserves it, Paul. But people don't know unless you were around. That was Marquette. It seems weird given how crazy he was, but he was a defensive guy, right?
100% defensive guy. And, you know, that's the way you practice.
You were second in the country, I believe, the year they won the title in points given up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, like we played a slower game. You know, people can argue that and say we played a slower game. But when you played against an Al McGuire team, you knew that points were going to be tough. Rebounds were going to be tough, and that you were going to face a team that was cohesive. A lot of people would look at Marquette and say, you know, Al is this bigger-than-life coach, kind of a ringmaster. But I always would tell people, with the uniforms, the crazy uniforms, and Al's flamboyant quotes and things that he would say to the media, we seemed like a very loose group of players and a really loose kind of team, but we were the most disciplined team in the country. We were disciplined on offense, and we were disciplined on defense. Now, surrounding us was a circus, but when we were on the court and he was kind of orchestrating us, it was business, and it was... We do it this way, and then we do it this way all the time. We show up a certain way. We bring a certain attitude, and people would kind of look at us and think, you know, they're just kind of a fly-by-night kind of group of guys. They're undisciplined, and they're all inner-city kids and this and that. And that was so far from the truth. We were the most disciplined team in the country.
Talking with Jim Boylan again, part of the 1977 Marquette Championship team. It's the Bo Ellis Golf Tournament. They do it every year for the Nicole Ellis Foundation. And this would be year 7 in which I said, I got to talk to you, Jim. We're going to do something on the show. This is the first time it has occurred. Everybody wondering about Giannis and is he going to stay with the Bucks? And you've spent a lot of time with great players. And I don't know how much interaction you ever had with Giannis, but I can't think of anybody better to ask just about the dynamics of the NBA now versus all the different roles that you had.
Yeah, you know, it's a tough thing. You know, I spent 4 years in Cleveland with LeBron James, which was an amazing experience for me because that guy. I coached in the NBA for 25 years. For 21 of those years. Other than the 4 years I spent with LeBron, every single team that I coached, we were always looking for a leader. We're always looking for the best player to take over the team.
Seriously?
Yeah. We're always looking for the best player to take over the team. And who can lead our team? Who can be the guy to set the tempo? And that guy came in. He was the first one in the gym every day. He was the last one to leave. He days off? No.
What's he practicing?
He just taking care of his body, lifting weights, getting up shots, and he just set the tempo for everybody. And I haven't spent time with Giannis, but, you know, in today's NBA, it seems to me that putting together a team has kind of gone through some changes. You know, I'm looking at I'm looking at OKC this year, and I'm looking at Indiana this year, and I'm seeing how you know obviously you need star players, but I think you can also win with a whole bunch of guys who are committed and play both sides of the court. So you're committed on offense, you're committed on defense, and if you have enough guys like that on your team, then you have a chance to contend. And I think OKC proved that this year, and I think Indiana proved that this year. So everything that I've read and seen about Giannis is that he loves Milwaukee, and I anticipate if I'm the Bucks, I don't want to part with that talent because they're few and far between. So you're going to trade him somewhere. What are you going to get? And I think then it becomes a responsibility of the organization to do the best job that they can to put the players around him that can make him even greater than he already is. So you need guys who can shoot the ball. And you need guys who can defend. And if you have those two things, I think you got a good chance, especially with a guy like him who can dominate a game. And I've seen LeBron dominate games. And, it's different than football. It's different than a lot of other sports. If you have one superstar, I mean superstar player, which he is.
What does dominate the game mean to you? Or what does a player have to do?
You can give him the ball in the fourth quarter, and you're down six with 8 minutes to go, and give him the ball every time, and he makes the right play. Whether he's,
Oh, he's not necessarily going to score.
Not necessarily score. He's going to make the right play every time, and then that's why you need the surrounding players who can do the things. Giannis, obviously, is aggressive going to the hole. So you need to have guys around him that can knock down shots. You draw the defense in. You kick it out, and guys make shots, and when the Bucks won the championship, that's what they did. They had him in the middle, kind of going to work, and kicking it out to Lopez and the other guys, Middleton and people like that, and they're making shots, I watched from afar, but I was so excited for the city of Milwaukee and. Watching the fans and the enjoyment they got out of that was a sweet moment. Even though I wasn't involved with the team, I still loved it.
So you did everything. You were a head coach, you're an interim coach. What was the best part of the NBA? I was going to say you're like Forrest Gump. You were everywhere.
I think the best part of the NBA is I was in the league for 25 years, and I can honestly say that there are guys who have bad raps. People think a certain way about someone. And I only had, and I won't say who it is because that would be wrong of me. I only had one guy. One guy in my 25 years that I thought, man, this guy's really, a terrible person.
One
guy. The other guys, they're all young kids. They're they have nothing, and then suddenly they have everything. And then you want them to be absolutely perfect.
Wow.
And that doesn't work that way.
Well, we've run out of time. And I'm glad because you said you had a story about me, but we've run out of time. You'll have to wait till next year, which could be another 7 years. Jim Boylan, you've been everywhere, and champions forever.
That's
you're
right.
In the club.
That's right.
Thanks for the time.
All right. Thank you.
Jim Boylan, back to ESPN National next.